Well, one of the great things about doing a podcast, and we've actually nearly recorded 50 episodes, but this will come out sometime around the 40th episode, I think.
Yeah.
Is that we get to interview amazing people. Some of them we know beforehand, and others, like the person we're introducing today, we actually didn't know. And Gloria Tabby actually approached us after listening to our podcast and said, "Hey, I've got an idea for a podcast myself, and I would love it if the Doolanders interview me for my first episode." So that's what today's episode is, Blake.
Yeah, look, it was a great opportunity to firstly meet Gloria, understand what she's doing with her podcast, Voice Everyday Racism, meet her husband, who was doing all of the stuff in the background, doing an amazing job. But here is our episode with Gloria.
Episode one of Voicing Everyday Racism.
Well, we are super excited to be here today with Gloria Tabby. So Gloria was born in Ghana, West Africa, and Gloria spent her development years from 1974 right through to 1992 living in a village in the Ghana capital city of Accra. Gloria migrated to Australia in 1992 seeking education and opportunity. And here in Australia, Gloria studied a bachelor's degree in environmental management at Western Sydney Uni and is a mother of two Australian-born, African-Australian teenagers, and just if that wasn't busy enough, has two Australian stepchildren. She's currently studying a master's degree in research, and we'll cover that shortly. And in that research, she studies racism. And Gloria is fast becoming an absolute change maker through published articles and as a guest speaker. We have the privilege today of launching her brand new podcast called Voice Everyday Racism. Hi, Gloria, and welcome to your podcast. How are you?
I'm really good. It's great to be here.
Fantastic. Tell us, what was it like growing up in Ghana?
Yes, I was born in a little village called Nkoko in Ghana. So Ghana is west coast of Africa. I had many siblings because in Ghana, people chip in to help. My parents had unofficial adopted children coming in and going in our homes. Yeah. And that was really great. And that was their way of reaching out to people that needed a bit of help. Education meant everything to my parents. And so they saw it as a way of, I guess, getting out of poverty, getting out of how we find ourselves on a disadvantaged side of the world. And so, yeah, in terms of living, you kind of, it was so simple that it was going to school, doing work, and doing more work. I didn't actually know of something called holidays. And so when you right. have a narrative around black people being exploited as lazy people, we actually didn't have a holiday until I came to Australia, till I had my first holiday. It was work nonstop.
Ghana is in some ways like Australia, isn't it? It's a colonised nation. What effects did this have on your family and your upbringing?
Okay, so mum and dad lived through the British inhabitation. My ancestors were basically fought the British out of our country. And Ghana is the first country in Africa to get independence in 1957. So let's just pause there and think about that. 1957, we are in 2021. That's only what, if I've got my mathematics right, 64 years ago? That's when Ghana became independence. And we are the first country in the whole of the African continent to get our independence. And so when we look at the country being so poor, we've got a long time to go to, I guess, undo what was done through colonialism. Ghana used to be called Gold Coast before independence because of its richness in gold. And that's probably why the British came there. And so right. when we got our independence, the name Gold Coast was changed to Ghana. I think it was a way of my ancestors saying, there's no more gold, leave us alone. And in terms of Gold Coast, it's nothing like what we have here in Australia. It's a different kind of Gold Coast. And the British did savage all that natural resources. So by the time they left in 1957, even though we've been rich in that resource, we had nothing and we had to start all over again. And so, you know, the community were poor. My grandparents, we never saw them growing up because they work on the farm in order for us to have education. And they will go from dawn to dusk. So we didn't have that luxury of having grandparents around, chipping in and helping parents, babysitting. They were working on cocoa farm.
Gloria, if you think back to your childhood, you look at Ghana and the population is predominantly black. The government, law enforcement, employers are predominantly black. Did you experience racism throughout your childhood?
That's an interesting question because I don't actually think I understood what racism is until I came to Australia. So I came to Australia in 1992 in late teens, you know, just on the cusp of adulthood. And growing up, no, there was no such thing. Everyone was valued and important in the family because of the way that the culture is so dependent on your family unit. Every person play a critical role. And so everyone was viewed as important in the family, in society, and the nation as a whole. And so, no, I didn't experience racism. In fact, until I started my first job in Australia, then I understood what racism is and what exclusion really meant.
So before we get into your experiences with racism in Australia, what was your original motivation to come to Australia?
That's a really interesting question. So what I've said about the British colonization in Ghana and leaving the country so poor in resources and so forth, you grow up not having many opportunities. So there was an opportunity to come to the West, be educated, and I guess do something for yourself. So the motivation was for education, basically. That's why I came here.
Okay. So you came in your late teens. And then what sort of experiences did you have with racism in Australia? Was it immediate? Was it something that grew over time? Must have been a shock if you hadn't experienced anything like it before.
Look, I had families, really close relatives who has also been in Australia in the 80s, early 80s, right, before my migration. And they used to tell us stories about the experiences. And we never really could conceptualize it in Ghana because, you know, when white people come to Ghana, we love them. And we, you know, really care for them and show them around and make them feel comfortable. In fact, a lot of important jobs in Ghana are often occupied by white people. And so we've lived in harmony with people like Lebanese, Indians in Ghana. And so it was a shock to me when I came here that I was treated differently because of the color of my skin. I mean, I've had racism in all spaces where there's human beings, on the streets, in the queue, in the supermarket, in the workplace. But can I say that the slurs that people will shout out to you on the street is doesn't compare to racism in the workplace. Because in the workplace, you are there all the time in long periods of time. And to have that happen to you is extremely uncomfortable, is demeaning, is stressful, and no one should be experience that in the workplace. The chances of you facing someone, you know, shouting a racist slur on the street is very minimal. You probably will never see them again.
Yeah.
But in places like workplace, we need to do better to make sure it's not there, because it really can set someone on a really devastating course, and it's quite traumatic.
So thinking about that, what do you, I mean, the motivation for someone on the street is maybe fear, or maybe they're just stupid. Who knows? What's the motivation in your workforce for someone to be racist towards you? Because you're clearly an intelligent and well-educated person who would be good at their job, I imagine. What is it within the workplace that drives someone to throw a racial slur at you?
It's a really important question, isn't it? And it's a question that we should really ask the person enacting the racism act, because we don't understand what motivates them. But what's really interesting is that history, in the way in which black people has been constructed through history of being inferior, being lazy, being incapable. I guess even though colonialism in my country is no longer, and here we like to think that it happened in the past, but those ideologies continue to play out in the way that we relate to black skin looking people. And I think that that's the problem that we face. Unless we change that narrative, we will continue to bear the brunt of racism. In the workplace, why people will do that, I have no idea. I've been told through really close friends, and as you know, my husband is white, and so I walk between those, the two races, and white people are important to me, just like black people. My family, half of it is white. And so I think that it comes to, in conversations, it comes to talking to people and knowing that they're human beings. They are normal people, really, beneath the skin. I think that will help people to understand us. In the workplace, I guess there could be fear. I've been told that your integrity as a person scares us, for example, and so then you get picked on because you are easily to be picked on. There's nothing else to pick on you but your skin. And so when a perpetrator cannot find anything else to pick on you but the color of your skin, then it's quite sad, isn't it?
It is. It is. Just sticking on the workplace theme for one more moment, do you think Australia is doing enough to actually incorporate black Africans into our communities and include them into workplaces?
I don't think they are really doing that. You know, it's actually, like what I've just said, annoying, because they are really good Australians. And I've got many of those in my life. But I think that the same narrative that I've been talking about through history and how black people are viewed continue to affect us. We could do more. We could do more by normalizing the talking about racism. We have been told, for example, sexual harassment, we can't deal with it until we talk about it. And that's what I think Australia, if we are open to talking about racism, then that will help us to have creative solutions to deal with it. And we just don't talk about it enough. We just don't. And I think that's where the problem is. When you look at the issues that we've had recently, like the Collingwood case, you know, where it talks about structural racism, it's not something that you can pinpoint. Here it is. Somebody said this. Here, I can package racism and show it to you. It's not like that. It's in the system which keep some people out and keep other people in. And that's what, if we don't talk about it, we won't be able to find what the issues are to, in order to deal with it.
Okay, so you have dedicated so much of your time and energy to this cause. So you're a researcher and a writer in Black history and racism. So tell your audience, what exactly does a racism researcher do?
Yeah, what do we do? We do a lot of digging, a lot of looking and asking the questions about why things are the way they are and not sort of taking it by the face value.
Well, what you're doing and what you're looking to do with a new podcast is you want to talk about racism. It sounds pretty interesting. Do you want to tell us about the show?
Yeah. So Voice Everyday Racism, it's about talking about racism. It's about creating a space for people on the receiving end of racism to talk about the experiences, to share with the wider community what it is and how it's really like to be a Black person living in Australia. You know, a lot of shows and talks are being done on our behalf. And so this podcast put that platform straight and the mic back onto the people that experiences on the day to day. So it's a space created for those on the receiving end, created by those people experience racism every day. So that's what the podcast is for. It's going to be a really safe space for them to do that and share with the wider community.
Fantastic. Hey, how's the guest list looking? Who have you got lined up?
Well, in a couple of weeks, I'm talking to a Black model who came to Australia as a refugee and had aspiration to be in the modelling world. But she found out that that space didn't cater for her, so she started her own. And so I'm going to be talking to her, so that should be really interesting. And then I've also have got two First Nation women, one of whom has got very light skin, First Nation woman, and she's going to talk and share with the community how it is to be fair skin First Nation woman. And then I'm going to talk with a dark-skinned First Nation woman for them to share about the experiences of being a dark-skinned First Nation woman. So, yes, I've got a few chats lined up, which should be really interesting learning for all of us.
What do you think the sorts of conversations you're going to be having with these people would be like?
Well, conversations about the experiences, how, but most importantly, the experiences, and in spite of the experiences, what you're doing with your life. Because sometimes, you know, there's all this Black deficit. It's really important to look at Black benefits and how, despite all the, you know, hindrances and the blockages in trying to break through what these amazing people are doing with their lives. And it's, I think it's going to be really great how they're fighting racism and, yeah, getting through life in spite of all that.
Fantastic. So you're right at the very beginning of this journey. So when you think about Voice Everyday Racism and your podcast and the platform at large, really, what's the dream? What are you hoping to achieve?
Well, I want the platform to be for marginalised group of Australia and really allow them for their racism experiences to be heard by themselves, not someone telling through the media, but they are telling their own story. I think that's really important. Connection for community and support for one another, understanding how communities deal with racism, and for Australia to learn, providing educational programs, connections, hopefully the government and community groups will be interested to learn about it for their policy development and so forth. That's my hope for the podcast.
Fantastic.
Does sound good, but the conversations you're having may be really challenging for a lot of people to listen to. People might not think that they're racist. They might think that racism doesn't exist. It might also be challenging for people who have been on the receiving end of racism. They might find it really challenging to listen to. What's your advice for anyone who feels that racism doesn't exist or they're not a racist person?
Yeah. Well, can I say that racism do exist in all social structures? Microaggression in the workplace and racial slurs on the streets, they are real and they add up. They are traumatic experience for people like me. They really are. I want to also stress that systemic racism, like what we saw with the Collingwood case, implies that what is being enacted on people like me can affect our lives. It can control our lives. This is done through how we have access to employment, housing, constant surveillance. And it's all about controlling someone's life. And this is not something that it gets done and there's a break. It's constant, it's ongoing. And so that's why we need to have this conversation so that people are aware that perhaps there's a blind spot in our society and to really learn to listen to those that are on the receiving end. That's what I like to say to them.
Great. Hey, Martin Luther King had a dream that one day his four children would live in a nation where they would not be judged by the colour of their skin, but by the content of their character. What a great dream. What's your dream, Gloria?
My vision really is irrespective of our skin colour, our race, our sex, our abilities, that we can all feel included and feel safe in society. Racism is harassment. Racism is bullying. Racism is demeaning, you know. So we don't all have to like each other, but we need to be able to feel safe in our own communities. We need to feel safe on our streets. We need to feel safe in our workplaces. That's really my dream, to create this safe environment for everyone. That's really what my dream is.
It's a great dream. And with everything that you've said so far, you know, we look forward to seeing you make that dream come alive. Well, we're really excited to see what you do with your platform, Gloria, and we can't wait to see the podcast released and out into the world. So if people would like to listen to your podcast or get involved in some way, what can they do?
I would like people to subscribe to Voice Everyday Racism. Engage with us. Please listen, like us. If you decide to, it would be also nice. And let's have conversations for change. They can reach us on LinkedIn. We're on Facebook. Our webpage is voiceeverydayracism.com. Email voiceeverydayracism@gmail.com. So this is how people can reach us and really have conversations with us. And let's extend, you know, the fair go of Australia to our black folks.
We can't wait to hear it go live. And congratulations on episode one, which is this one. And look, we'll be certain to talk to our guests on the Doolanders podcast about listening to your podcast. And yeah, we really hope it's a great success for you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Been great.
Thanks, Gloria.
Thanks, Gloria.
Thanks to Doolanders.
So that was it, Blake. That was episode one of Voice Everyday Racism with Gloria. What did you think?
Good on her. Like, I was so rapt that she reached out to us to help her launch her brand new podcast. She's so passionate about making a difference across Australia and across the globe, and really opening up that conversation around racism. And, you know, it's something that I think everyone across Australia can get involved in.
Absolutely. And let's just tell you how you can get involved.
Yep. How, Nick?
All right. We want to go to voiceeverydayracism.com. Check out the podcast on Apple Podcasts,
yep,
Spotify, Google, yep, Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Some would say, do it.
Awesome. Well done, Gloria.
G-L-O-R-I-A.